Imagine if you held an NFT in your digital wallet, it would give you access to all the world's major sporting events and other festivals and music events such as Justin Bieber or Harry Styles. Or not only that, it will also give you access to select hotels all around the world. That is something what my guest today, Ed Vincent or Edward Vincent, is building. It's called Festival Pass. And in today's episode, we talk about things such as solving the chicken and egg problem for marketplaces, how to find artists, how to self-fund a startup or not go the VC route, processing Web3 payments, and other challenges of building a startup, and so much more. So if you are building a startup, if you are building a marketplace, then this episode is for you. Hello, innovators, explorers, and risk takers. Welcome to another episode of the Web3 with Sam Kamani podcast. I'm your host, Sam Kamani. I am an Amazon best-selling author, a tech startup founder, and a strategic advisor to multiple Web3 startups. I'm here to take you on a journey to explore the world of Web3, all the risks, all the opportunities, and my goal is to educate you about what other people, the founders, the investors, what are they building? What are they paying attention? You can take advantage of it, so you can benefit from it. However, I would like to start with saying that this is not investment advice. I would still highly encourage you to do your own research. I have nothing to sell you. So with that out of the way, let's get into it. It's great to have you on the show. Would love to know a bit more about Festival Pass and what you are doing with it at the moment.
Sure, Sam. Good to be here. I think a lot of it is the context that's involved in why Festival Pass today. And I know we talked a little earlier before we jumped onto this about your entrepreneurial journey. Mine's very, very similar in that, you know, I've been an entrepreneur for well over 20 years. This is my fifth startup. First one was an e-commerce company back in 99 that I sold in 2001. And then through most of the 2000s, I had an agency, and that agency was an experiential marketing agency. About 70 people in the agency, but I really enjoyed bringing a lot of big brands to live events. That was kind of our core thing, was activating brands at events. And that was kind of the pinnacle of really realizing how much I loved the human connection that happens at a live event, whether that be a festival, a concert, sporting event, whatever it is. So that was kind of the beginning of where the future would be holds for Festival Pass. After that, I had a SaaS business in the retail and franchise space that I sold in 2014. And then prior to Festival Pass, for about 4 or 5 years, I had a data and analytics company in the entertainment space. It was called Predict Analytics, still exists today. And we would help a lot of big brands in the television and entertainment space, like A&E Networks or AMC Networks. Some people might know those brands, but they also might know the TV shows behind it. So like at AMC, it was, you know, everything from Walking Dead to Breaking Bad to, you know, you name all those shows, and A&E, many of the others. But we got to be known in the space as kind of consumer data people that really helped some of these brands excel. Fast forward a little bit, one of the companies and clients that we had in that was a movie subscription company that kind of changed, infamously changed a little bit of the world in Hollywood here. And I learned a lot from it. But what I also learned was what to do and what not to do in a subscription-based business. So taking a lot of the pieces of my past, right? Taking the concept of commerce online, the concept of recurring SaaS revenue, the concept of live events, and seeing that the overall live event space is a $200 billion global market. I wanted to do something different that was more subscription and membership driven in the live event space. Because typically when people go to live events today, prior to us, it was transactional. So they go and find a ticket, they buy a ticket. They never had any love for the brand that they're buying the ticket for. There's no membership, no community, no ability to really get to know the people that you're actually in the community with. So when we launched Festival Pass, it was really all about that. So what it is, it's a subscription membership for live events. So people pay a monthly or an annual fee, and for that, they receive credits, and they can go spend those credits at over 80,000 live events. Wow. Currently, we're mostly in the U.S., especially on the live event side. So we have about 80,000 live events. We also happen to have hotels on the platform. So you can use your credits to get discounted hotels. So you can book room nights with your credits on our platform. And those are global. So, you know, if anybody was a member of Festival Pass, they could globally redeem their credits for hotel room nights everywhere.
Oh, that's fantastic. So, I mean, because I travel a lot, just last week I was in LA and San Francisco the few days before that. So this would be like ideal. And I go to lots of conferences, events, but I go as media. But I still do have need for, you know, hotels and like all around the world. And in the recent time, I have found that it's been 3 years since I booked Airbnb because of all the stories I hear all the time, because it's not a consistent experience. One property could have fantastic experience, other property you could not. So sure. I don't want to, and I'm so busy dealing with so many other things, and I don't want to deal with one more thing. I just want convenience. So that's why I still go for hotels, because sometimes they can be a bit pricier. But so how would this work? So run me through, because I'm sure there's a lot of founders who listen to this and who also travel from, you know, one event to another.
Yeah. And so the first thing is all the events are, you know, everything from concerts, like any major concert you can think of at an arena in a city, you know, pick your, whether it's Harry Styles or Justin Bieber, or you pick whoever you want to go to. We usually have them on the platform. Sporting events. So in the US, NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, soccer, all of it on the platform. So one of the things that people tend to do is, you know, they'll either buy a monthly or an annual subscription, and they'll receive their credits, and then it's just available to them whenever they seek out an event or a hotel they want to go. So it's really that simple. Is, let's say, for example, I paid an annual subscription, I would receive 1,080 credits in my account. It's effectively the aggregate of what it would be if you were monthly. So if you were monthly, you would receive 90 credits every month. But if you're an annual subscriber, you just get your credits up front, and then you could choose to use them whenever you want, right? So, you know, I might decide I need a hotel room for the night in San Francisco, and I would go in and I'd see, oh, okay, this hotel room's 150 credits, 200 credits. And I would just check out and book the hotel, and it would just take the credits out of my account upon checkout. Same for an event, same way for an event. I would, you know, pick a Harry Styles concert, and it would be 100 credits. And then I would simply go to checkout, and it would remove the credits out of my account.
Are these credits, sorry to interrupt, but are these credits a bit cheaper than booking just the hotel directly for?
Yeah, so there's a couple of value adds for being a member, right? So one of the first things is we don't charge additional ticketing fees. So if you ever bought a ticket to an event, often what happens, especially in the secondary market, you think you're paying $100, and then you go to check out and on StubHub or SeatGeek or any of those, and it's $160, but, you know, it's an extra 60% fee on the way out. So we don't add those additional fees into the platform. So that's one value. You're usually going to spend, you know, anywhere from 5 to 30% less on our platform, depending upon, you know, the level you're at. And then on hotels, we typically are cheaper as well, right? So we're pulling in hotel pricing from many, many different sources because of the fact that we're a member-based service, and you have to be a member and be logged in to actually redeem a book a room. We're usually also getting better discounted hotel room rates.
Yep. Oh, that's fantastic, because I'm right now on your website looking for hotels for my next trip and all that. So this is a fantastic thing, because generally I just go to sort of Google Flights or Skyscanner, and then from there I go to the different sort of hotel aggregators as well, and
just
their prices and stuff. So this could be super useful service to a lot of people. So how has your experience been? What's been the most challenging part on this startup's journey on Festival Pass?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest challenge was launching it right before COVID. So as you can imagine, there was no live events, but it's more of a silver lining, because what we did is we spent that time building the infrastructure to be able to be ready for where we're at today. And, you know, typically in any kind of marketplace, and since you're in tech, I think you understand the concept of marketplace. There's two sides to every marketplace. One for us would be building the inventory, right? Getting all the hotel rooms and getting all the events. And then the other side is the consumer adoption. So we spent so much time during that building phase and built so many relationships that enable us to have all of that inventory on the platform. So as I mentioned, throughout the year, there's over 80,000 live events that are on the platform. So we kind of solved the core inventory side. There's other things we'll be doing over the next few years to develop even deeper direct relationships with some of the event producers in order to give special access and, you know, really cool things for our members. You know, we're working on a project for next year with a few different, you know, festival owners, so that, you know, there's a special Festival Pass section at the event. People can come and meet each other and really gain some special access. But currently today, getting the inventory was really key for us. And then the other side of the marketplace, so that was the challenge, which is no longer a challenge. So it was one of those things as you go through the process and you finally, you know, get to a point of scale where you're like, okay, you know, anybody that's signing up isn't going to say, I can't find events I want to go to because there's an event for everybody on the platform. And then the second thing is on the consumer side, right? So now we're just, you know, getting the word out to as many people as possible. We're working on some of the marketing avenues so we can, now that we have the inventory, we can continue to onboard new users, new members.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I have more questions. Did you guys get funding? Are you guys self-funded, bootstrapped? How are you guys?
Yeah, good question. So that's actually one of the kind of motives of what our path is I wrote a somewhat of a manifesto a couple of years back that I'm committed to building a 100 million revenue company without taking traditional venture capital. So what we've done to date is we have a really great cap table of individual entrepreneurs and folks that have helped fund us to this date. So, you know, it was really just through relationships we're able to build. There's 20 or 30 different individuals that have all built or sold companies. You know, I'm trying to think of your audience. Like, you might have heard of the HomeAway or VRBO, speaking of the hotel groups. The original co-founder is an investor in our company individually. We have, you know, a professional hockey player from the New York Rangers who's an investor individually. We have, you know, so there's been about 20 or 30 of these people that all put up capital to help us get to where we are today. And we're, you know, looking at other different sources for growth capital. Some of it is, you know, in the world of low-cost debt. In the world today, there's a little more options for debt, even with the rising interest rates. There's some unique products out there that make a lot of sense, especially when you're in a SaaS-driven recurring revenue model-based business. And lastly, I'm sure we're going to get to Web3, but we can share a little bit about what we're doing.
Absolutely. Yes, please. Yeah.
Yeah. And I look at that as I would call it not a source of operating capital, but a source of capital to really help boost our servicing of our NFTs. So I'll explain what I mean by what we're doing with the NFTs. And as we sell out our collection, it's bringing capital in up front, of which we're keeping that capital as a way to service the use of the NFTs. So what we decided to do, and there's a million things that we've done in the Web3 space. Of course, first we did the simple things where we accept cryptocurrency for membership and all the regular things that you would have to do with stable stakes to even be considered, you know, Web3 forward thinking. And because the simple fact that the way our company was built from day one is very philosophically Web3. It's about membership, right? And Web3 has been all really about shared ownership and membership. It's about community, which Web3 is about community. And it's about the ability to participate going forward. So what we found really exciting is to actually now have both the philosophy and the technology to use Web3 technologies in order to forward our original mission, which was really driven by like a Web2 environment. So the first NFT we launched, we call it the Lifetime Founders NFT. And what it means is that anybody that holds this NFT, they immediately get a year's worth of credits up front. So they get $1,200 worth of credits in their account to use however they want to use them on hotels or on events. And then every single year in perpetuity on the mint date, they get another $1,200. So every single year, their credits are refreshed $1,200 so they can continue to use it. So we call it a lifetime of live events. One price, you hold the NFT and for your life, you're going to live events.
How much is that NFT?
Currently, we're selling the first tranche right now, which is 1,000 of the total 10,000, and that's 0.95 Ethereum, which
that's a bargain.
It is. It is for many reasons, right? One, it is because of the current price of Ethereum, right? As we speak today, it's almost like you're getting money back because you're paying 0.95 Ethereum, cost about $1,150 in today's price, and then you're immediately getting $1,200 worth of credits to use on the platform, and then every year you get $1,200 more credits.
Yes.
So anybody in this first tranche of 1,000 is going to get the best deal that will ever happen in the world of live events.
Yes.
And then what happens is once we sell the first 1,000 out, the second 1,000, the price will go up a little bit. And then the third 1,000, the price will go up a little bit. So by the time we sell the last 1,000 of the 10,000, we'll be around 2.5 to 3 Ethereum. And also the price of Ethereum may be different at that point in time. So I encourage people to go in and buy now because they'll never get such a good deal ever.
Yeah, totally. And there is so much utility. This is not just a JPEG that they're buying. They're buying access to any event in the world. They're buying access to any hotel in the world. Like a huge selection of them. That's fantastic. Yeah, you were saying something?
I was just going to say another value is we're curating quarterly events that are only for NFT holders. So only those who actually hold the NFT, even over and above our regular subscribers, will be able to access these quarterly bucket list events. So could be things like, you know, a concert with a very popular artist for only a few hundred NFT holders, or it might be going to one of the sporting events and going in a luxury box with 20 or 30 people and then having dinner with the players after, that kind of thing. So we're really excited about those quarterly events we're planning out. I think we're going to do something special in Austin Q1 for South by Southwest. If anybody comes to South by, if they hold our NFT and are out South by, they're going to get access to some really cool, you know, well-known artist parties.
Oh, that's fantastic. And I have another question for you. And that is that who are your initial customers from this first batch of founders collection of NFT? Are they Web3 native people? Are they just young people who are artists themselves? Who are they? Do you know? Do you have a bit of an idea?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I'd say it's kind of split. Most tend to have been people that just like live events and that want to support it, because the one thing we did is we made sure that they can buy with their credit card. So it's an easier onboarding process. So even if they don't have a wallet today, they can simply go buy with a credit card and it will get placed in a custodial wallet until they're ready to transfer it out to their MetaMask and attach it to our platform. So that's one thing. And then also, put it this way, out of the ones that are sold, I'd say about 60% have been purchased with a credit card and about 40% have been purchased with ETH. So that almost inherently answers your question, right? Is that about 60% are non Web3 native and about 40% are Web3 native?
Yeah. Yeah. That is so cool. I have a question around, that's why I got my book to write down all my questions so I don't forget anything.
Sure.
Are you using MoonPay or something like that to on-ramp people?
We're not using MoonPay. We're using a company called CrossMint here in the US. I don't know. I guess it could be global, but the company's called CrossMint, and what they supply the technology to accept the credit card, which immediately gets turned into ETH for us and deposited in our wallet. And the NFT gets held in their custodial wallet until you export it.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. And did your company create the smart contract for that NFT in-house, or did you get a company like CrossMint or someone else to create it, like for you, the smart contract for this NFT?
Sure. So it's kind of a hybrid, right? So we didn't mint it on a platform. What we did is we have a partner agency that is a Web3 agency that built it for us. So basically in order to mint the NFT, you know, you can mint it at mint.festivalpass.com. All the information in the microsite for the NFT is at family.festivalpass.com, because we call it the Festival Family. That's the project name. So all of that is within our own environment on our site and our brand, but some of the smart contract and the minting technology was developed by a partner agency of ours.
Well, that's fantastic, because what I'll do is I'll put all these links underneath in the description, in the show notes, wherever this goes. The other thing I'd like to touch on is that you said earlier on when we were talking about the challenging bit of building this, because it's like a two-sided marketplace problem. They call it the chicken and egg problem in the tech startup world, where you got to get the suppliers as well as the consumer. You get to get both the sides.
Yeah.
If you had to choose one to build first, which one should someone build first in your point of view?
Yeah, I mean, from my experience, is getting the supply is necessary, because it's hard to get a consumer to pay money for something that doesn't exist.
Yes.
Right? It's hard also on the supply side to promise the supplier flow through or purchases, because of the simple fact you need an audience for the purchases. But it is a catch-22. It is that chicken or egg. But what we found is having the inventory first was super helpful in convincing people, because, you know, a consumer comes to the site, they say, I love this idea, it's great, but there's nothing I can spend my credits on. That's not good. So it's very hard to get consumers to take their credit card out and spend $100 a month or $1,000 a year without knowing what they can actually use the credits on.
Yeah, that makes so much sense.
So it's almost like get the inventory any way you can, and then it will work out with the consumers. And then, you know, as we have, you know, we have high ambitions to truly grow it. And I think by the end of 2024, or even the end of 2023, we expect to have hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of members. And in that capacity, what it does is it gives us more and more leverage to increase our margin on the supply side.
Yeah. That sounds good. Yeah. So can you please tell me a bit about how you got together? Like, how did you find the artist, or who's doing the artwork? Is it your in-house team? How did you make those decisions?
So the NFT, right, as I was mentioning, we have 10 tranches that make up the full 10,000. And each tranche will have its own separate artwork. And The reason we do it that way, and I'll answer your question in a second, is that we're trying to make each artwork identify with what the passion is. So the first one, and when you go to family.festivalpass.com, you'll see an image of, we call this person Legend. He's more of a rocker, a guitarist. And it's really supposed to connect with people that are like going to rock concerts or rock festivals or just music in general. And then we future art that we have coming up are going to be some associated with actual individuals, and some are like Legend, which is not an actual individual. It's just a persona. So we'll have a female persona coming up. We have a couple of DJs that will come up. Yes. So people that like, you know, EDM music or stuff like that, we're actually talking to a couple of well-known DJs that will likely be the personas. And then we'll have one that's a sports figure. We'll have one that's a chef. So it really gets into kind of the thing people like. So to answer your question, you know, we have an artist that we have been using for all of them. So we make sure that each of them tie together, and you can tell it's from the same collection, the same artist, the same attributes.
Yeah.
And of course, each one makes up all 1,000 of each character. They're all, you know, they're NFTs, right? So they're all specific attributes for each one. And then some attributes are more rare than others. Yeah. Like you can see, if you are looking at Legend on the family site, you can see that he has a black festival pass lanyard, like the concert lanyard.
Yes.
So
you can see it.
So you'll see the large portion will be black, but there's also a gold lanyard that are kind of rare. So anybody that ends up with a gold lanyard might be rare. The hair color might be different. The, you know, the sunglasses might be different. So there's a lot of different fun things we're doing.
Yeah.
With each one.
Yeah. I initially thought it's Lenny Kravitz. So that's why I was asking. He looks a bit like...
Well, he does. And I would say, while it isn't supposed to specifically be, that the same aura and concept is, right? So it's like the, you know, he's tear-free like Lenny. He's a popular like Lenny. He's
kind of like a cross between Lenny Kravitz and Jimi Hendrix.
there we go.
See? Yeah, so that's what it looks like. Yeah.
You're obviously a rock fan, so you should have this one
specifically. So, but I do listen to all different genres. I listen to EDM. I listen to all different genres of music and stuff. So yeah, but it's very cool, definitely. So what's next for Festival Pass? Are you targeting just the events and the hotels niche, or are you planning in the future, in say like 2 to 3 years? Of course, very long term for Web3, other niches as well, or going into other sort of market segments?
Yeah, so our kind of mission for our company is to really help curate a passion connected experiences. And, you know, the event-based stuff we're doing really is the core of that. And obviously hospitality is a direct complement to everything related to events. So, you know, the idea is you go to an event, you book a hotel room while you're at that event. So the answer, the big question is how many other products might we have that you can spend your credits on? And we'll see where that goes over time. I mean, I do see other complementary products being available, whether, you know, and they're all going to be correlated to entertainment. So whether it's, you know, being able to spend your credits on even live streamed events is something that's on the table, or being able to go to a show and then buying merch with your credits and then having it auto ship to your house. Like, you know, you might go to a Harry Styles. He was just in Austin, but you go to a Harry Styles event, you got the ticket, and while you're there at checkout, you're like, oh, here's the concert t-shirt for this tour. Let me grab that too. And, you know, you go to the show and it's automatically sent to your house, and that kind of stuff is relevant to us. The other thing that we think is important, because when we talk about Web3, you and I had talked earlier that utility is super important, right? So it's not just the art. To me, utility is the product and art is the packaging. So it's just a really cool package that you happen to have the really, really cool utility in. Where we find value is helping provide other communities actual utility. So we've already started partnering with other cool brands, and hopefully we'll partner with dozens, if not hundreds, where their communities can gain access. So I don't know if you've heard in the US of a water brand called Liquid Death.
Liquid Death? No, I haven't.
So it's a
I have actually.
Yes. So it's a very fun water brand that happens to be at you know, many, many festivals and events. You'll find Liquid Death water there. So they have an NFT project called the Murderhead Death Club. So we've partnered with them. So anybody that actually holds one of their NFTs, they can connect their wallet to Festival Pass. And anybody that holds one of their NFTs automatically gets a badge on Festival Pass, and they start getting free credits every month just for holding their NFT.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
So So we're looking at numerous other brands that we're partnering with, because a lot of times brands have really cool communities and really amazing content, but don't always have a physical utility they can give to their community. And we're really excited about doing that. Anyway, and there's more coming in that world. And, you know, part of it is to really build out kind of a Web 2 to Web 3 rewards mechanism. So people can come to one of those communities, immediately say, well, hey, I have this NFT that I can redeem it for X rewards on Festival Pass.
Yeah, makes sense. Makes so much sense. What's your advice for someone who wants to build a Web3 startup?
Well, fair. It all comes, Web3 can mean so much, right? So is it DeFi? Is it Web3 in terms of the NFTs? Is it Web3 in terms of community and content? Is it Web3 in terms of IP? Like a lot of communities have built a lot of IP with the hopes to be the next Disney, you know, is that a hard thing to do? It's, you know, it can be, but yeah. So the answer I would say is it's deciding what vertical within the Web3 space they want to solve and then applying it to something that is tangible and has utility and benefits.
Yep. Makes so much sense. I was going to say Web3 as in anything that is related to blockchain, crypto, the decentralized web or way of doing things. But I agree.
And just to add to it, I see a ton of opportunity in industries that people don't expect yet that will be transformed by Web3.
Absolutely.
There's a ton of opportunity in real estate, ton of opportunity in education, in document processing. And, you know, you can just go on and on. The idea of having a smart contract and a, you know, a trustless vault of proof of ownership is just a tremendous opportunity for every industry.
Yeah, 100% agree. And my sort of one of my final questions is out of the two is, do you have is there anything are you looking for? Are you looking for funding or anything?
Yeah, I mean, I would ask, you know, we just want people to come and enjoy the community and the NFT. So anybody that's even ever been to a live event or wants to go to one, or anybody that ever thinks travel is on their agenda, like go mint the NFT. Like I promise there'll never be a time in life that you'll ever be able to pay a smaller price for it. So, you know, go mint the NFT, even if you don't use it a ton in year one, even if you live in another country and you're not in the US all the time, you mint it now and every single year forever, you're still going to continue to get those benefits. And, you know, as we grow, we'll be in Europe, we'll be back down your way in Australia, New Zealand at some point.
Yeah.
But also you can use the credits globally on hotels. And, you know, you could also gift some tickets to friends, right? If you own the NFT, you could grab Harry Styles tickets in LA and then digitally transfer them to your friends in LA and gift them some tickets. So it's a great way to participate.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the last question that I have is that how are you guys navigating this whole so-called market downturn, crypto winter, the loss of trust because of all the things that have happened in the recent times?
Yes. Yeah. So I guess there's almost a bifurcated question, right? So one is the crypto winter. And that to me is truly really just about asset pricing. Right. So, you know, yes, Bitcoin's down. Yes, tokens are down. Yes, there's, you know, less activity in the secondary markets of NFTs. But the way I look at it is it's, you know, we're in the build phase. We have so many really cool things that can be going on. It gives an opportunity for people to actually get into projects that are meaningful to them. So it's not about FOMO. It's not about, hey, I got to miss out. I got to get into this because the price of the asset's going to go flying up. So I think it's a great time for everybody in the Web3 place that are building. You know, Web3 is not going away. It's the horse is already out of the barn. Every industry will be transformed by it in the next 2 to 5 years. So the answer is I'm not that worried about the quote unquote winner in the crypto space. The other thing you referred to, which is the loss of trust
and the whole
loss of trust and FTX debacle. I just wish people can mentally understand what it is, because it isn't really anything to do with Web3, right? It's simply greed of certain individuals that chose to take some actions and, you know, risk or bet with depositors' funds on high risk investments that really has nothing to do. That, in a weird sort of way, it actually supports decentralization of Web3, right? The idea that the issues happened in a centralized exchange. And being in a centralized exchange, providing no regulation, you know, offshore out of, you know, from the US perspective, without regulation And without decentralization, you know, people can commit fraud and they can do bad things. And, you know, this is all really bad. It's nothing to do with actual Web3.
Yeah, that is so, so true. Yeah. I mean, I don't know where to even begin on that side of things. And I don't see those sort of things stopping, because I've been here since 2011, 12, and I've seen from Mt. Gox to BitConnect to Cryptopia to so many, especially in 2017 and 18, so many of these sort of things happen again and again and again in this industry related to sort of crypto, that I don't expect these sort of things to stop at all. Sure. It's like, it's not magically that everyone's going to become honest, and if they have this sort of temptation, that they will not dip into someone's fund. So I don't know what's the solution. What do you think is the solution? What should happen?
Well, I mean, I think on the protect the individual user side, of course, there's ways for people to scam others about, you know, phishing to get them to give access to the wallets and stuff like that.
That's what happens in the NFT world all the time. Like,
yeah. But the reality is that in that true decentralized world, the technology itself isn't the problem, right? So as long as somebody has a wallet and they're holding assets, whether it's a MetaMask or something else, you know, I suggest using a ledger to protect the, you know, hard wallet to make sure you have additional security on it. But the reality is that if your assets are held by you in your wallet, they're as secure as they can be, as long as you don't make a human mistake, which is, you know, clicking on the wrong button or, you know, allowing access to a wallet because your browser got left open, or just the thing that generally happened. So my recommendation is just to be careful, and just if you have certain amounts of money, use cold storage and, you know, use your ledger to protect it. Be careful on the centralized exchanges. I mean, it's in hindsight, it's easy to think about it, right? Is if you're on a exchange where your deposits are being held in custodial-based funds in an environment that's not regulated, it's risky, right?
Yeah.
Like, meaning that the FTX US didn't have the same problems FTX International did. And, you know, you think of Coinbase has been a pretty secure environment where they've been very judicious in how they're handling client deposits.
Yeah. So that's what it will pretty much eventually come down to. You know, choose the exchange based in your country, as long as your country has some decent laws and stuff.
Yeah.
And things like that. So yeah, I think that's what will happen over time. And I do think so that the industry will mature over time and sort these sort of things out. It won't be the wild, wild west in 5 years' time. I can guarantee it, because with time, right, otherwise the scams get bigger and bigger. The next one will be bigger than this. And this is, I still feel like we haven't seen the full effect of FTX, because so many startups which were venture backed, and especially if they had funding from Alameda, they had their treasuries on FTX. So they are going to struggle in the next few weeks and months. So it will take 3 months, I think, 3 to 6 months for us to know the real effect of it.
I agree.
But look, on that serious note, what I'm going to do is I'm going to put all the links to your website and links to your project, so people can go and check it out. They can see the utility. They can see what they get for owning that. You know, that is not just an image. It's the utility that they get to stay in hotels, they get access to the events, access to celebrities, access to all these sort of things that they wouldn't for a fraction of a price that would cost in the real world. So yeah, I think those are the type of things that are going to survive. And a lot of the other, just the JPEGs, are just going to die, because that's just a thumbnail signifying, you know, it's just the icon to your program in a way. That's how I see it, as that on your computer or on your phone, you have the icon, you click on it, and then you go and access the utility of that software. So there's the same thing that's going to happen, that, you know, your NFT will be just the image will just be the icon to the utility that project gives you. Yeah. So,
yeah, I look at, as I said, I look at it as packaging.
Yes.
So it's like, you know, you can have the same ring, like, you know, but some of the rings come in a nicer box and some of the rings come in a less nice box.
Yeah.
And the one thing I think is fun about the way NFTs work is everybody can own a package. It can come in a package that nobody else has, which is kind of cool.
That is so cool. Yeah, that is so cool way of thinking it. Yes.
It's fun, but it doesn't mean it's worth $100,000 just because it's got a cool package.
yeah. But I mean, what is it giving me? $100,000? At $100,000, I got to be having lunch or dinner with Steph Curry, you know, it's like, so yeah, that's what it kind of comes down to. But look, it's been an absolutely fascinating conversation with you. Thank you so much and wish you best of luck for your project Festival Pass.
Thank you, Sam. I appreciate it.
Cool. Thank you so much for tuning in and watching this or listening to this episode of the Web3 with Sam Kamani podcast. You know the drill. Leave a comment, please subscribe or share it with a friend. Now, if you are building something really interesting in this space, then reach out to me. My DMs are open. I'm at Sam Kamani on Twitter or on LinkedIn or on TikTok or on any platform. Just go and search for my name. Reach out to me. I would love to help you. I would love to have a conversation with you if time permits. So, having said that, I want to wish you best of luck to whatever you are building. I know that about 35 to 40% of my listeners are founders themselves. So I want to say best of luck and go build that next innovation.